This is the Australia Report with Vic Aladev. Good day, mate.
Vic Aladev, a very, very good good day to you. Moed Tov. I hope you had a good Pesach. How was it?
It was very meaningful, Howard. We are, my wife and I, blessed with five little grandchildren, aged 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. And so it was very much focused around the young ones, as well as obviously bringing in some ideas and discussion about, you know, some of the deeper. But even one of the, my little seven-year-old, even when we were discussing the fact that someone asked the question, how many Jews actually left Egypt? And I happened to have researched that, and the number was 2 to 3 million, which was less than a quarter of the number of Jews in Egypt, which is incredible. And my little seven-year-old says to me, why didn't everyone leave? And now, when one thinks for a moment about the implications of that question and takes it forward 3,000 years to, you know, Germany, Europe, etc., why didn't everyone leave? It was a very profound question, actually. So, very meaningful passage.
Amazing. Vic, your family, you've told us before, your family comes from Rhode Island. So does that mean, is that would, I would imagine, a Sephardi lineage? So do you eat kitniot on Pesach? Is that a family tradition?
So the answer definitely yes. And the other Sephardic tradition is that Sephardim eat rice on Pesach, which Ashkenazi people do not. And so definitely yes, my father, my family, yes, on both sides, my mother and my father's family, from the island of Rhodes. And just on that subject, Rhodes was the southernmost community to be destroyed by the Holocaust. It is at the southern tip of Europe, whereas yeah, everything else was happening in the north of Europe. So while the entire Holocaust defies comprehension, that right there also does, because it was July 1944, one of the last communities to be destroyed, alongside with Hungary, July 44. And at the sort of time when Germany was, you know, losing the war, yet they were still finding it within themselves to send thousands of troops to the southern tip of Europe to round up Jews from the Greek islands.
Unbelievable. Well, I suppose that was their priority. They had their priorities very, very clearly set out. Vic, talking about news in Australia, Malkalifa, what's the latest on that case?
So the latest is, finally, after a long time, a definitive date has been set for her trial, and that is August 1. Between now and then, there will be a number of pre-trial legal arguments and hearings, but the actual trial has been set for August 1 in Melbourne, down in the state of Victoria. And we've discussed before in this program that her lawyers were considering applying for a judge-only case, but it will not be heard by a judge. It'll be heard by, I mean, there will be a judge, but it'll be decided by a jury and not just by a single judge. So it'll be a jury trial and August 1. She has been appearing in a number of pre-trial hearings, etc., mostly by Zoom from the women's only prison where she's being held in Melbourne, just outside Melbourne. And so now, and just to remind people that she is being charged with over 660 charges of abusing three sisters during her time as principal of the Adas Israel School in Melbourne. This is between 2004 and 2008. And she fled to Israel right after it became clear that she was going to be charged. And after a decade over there fighting extradition, she was extradited back to Australia, and now will face actual trial August 1.
Why is she opting, or why is she trying to get a judge versus a jury? Why does she think that that is to her advantage?
It's a very interesting question. And there seems to be, I mean, a school of thought that if it's a judge only, you only have to convince one person of your innocence. But then one mind goes back in the conversation to the David Irving trial when he sued Deb Lipstadt for defamation, when she
exactly
said that Irving and there was one judge, his name was Gray from memory, and you know, he came out with, you know, absolutely definitive damning Irving for, you know, for being a liar, for everything that came out of that. So there was the right outcome in that trial, and that was with one judge. So that said, there's some school of thought that you have a greater chance of acquittal if you have one judge rather than having to persuade an entire jury of the innocent. But either way, the finding is, or the outcome is, that it will be a jury trial and not just to be heard by one judge.
Political parties canvassed on Jewish issues ahead of national elections. Tell us about this.
So the national election has been called for May 21, which is 5 weeks away, and within seconds of the election being called by the government, Jewish issues are, when I say front and center, certainly for the Jewish community front and center, and very much so. So, and what I mean by that is that in some of the biggest Jewish electorates in the country, there are people, the current members are being challenged. So, for example, Wentworth here in Sydney, which has 12% of the electorate Jewish, and the sitting member is Dave Sharma, a former ambassador to Israel. He's of Indian heritage himself, but former ambassador to Israel. And he only holds his seat by a margin of 1.3%, which obviously is tiny. And there are a raft of independents who are standing in various seats, and they're being funded in the main by someone, by a very wealthy person. And so there's a person standing against Dave Sharma, and she is a very charismatic individual, etc. And so, and the same thing's happening against Josh Frydenberg, the treasurer of the country, who's openly Jewish. He's being challenged by an independent. And so the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, which is the federal root body of the community, they've done, which they always do in the elections, and that is send around a detailed survey to all the major political parties, as well as key independents in these very Jewish-dominated or Jewish seats, as it were, to ask them their views and their opinions, where they stand on Jewish issues, on Israel-related issues, on BDS, etc. And so, and those results are published in detail before the election. And so, for those who are, you know, deciding their vote on where candidates stand on these sorts of issues, they will have a very detailed response, on the record response, you know, to work off.
Oh, it's just an incredible thing that this always becomes the issue. And finally, Ukrainians arriving in Sydney.
Well, that's right. And a group has been very quickly formed called the Jewish Ukrainian Support Group. And this has come together an amalgamation of a number of our wealthy organizations, Jewish Care and various others, and have come together to talk about how to best coordinate a response to the crisis, and specifically to Jewish Ukrainians who are seeking refuge in this country. And quite a number of Ukrainians have already come into the country, and Jewish Ukrainians as well. And so it's very good to see that this Jewish Ukrainian support group has come together. So there's a coordinated response, coordinated appeals happening in terms of food, shelter, clothing, money, funding, etc., just to help them and to help them, you know, restart their lives over. And then tied up with that, obviously, is the issue of refugee status. And that is something which is still being worked through by the federal government as to how and when to accord them status in this country.
It's interesting because Australia really does have a tremendous amount of sensitivity towards refugees, towards immigrants, and towards people trying to rebuild their lives. That I guess it's a fundamental of Australian society.
Well, it is very much so. You're absolutely right, and it's a sensitive issue as well as being fundamental to the makeup of this country. The fact that it is one of the most multicultural nations in the world, and refugees coming in after upheavals and war across Europe and around the world. So the one of the controversial policy decisions which has been taken by recent governments is when refugees apply to come to this country, the government has instituted what they call an offshore resettlement policy. And so they've made deals with some of the islands in the South Pacific where those who are applying for refugee status will be housed temporarily, in quotes, on some of the South Pacific islands. And then if their application is approved, they will then be brought onto mainland Australia. But it's a very controversial policy, but one which is in place, actually.
Absolutely, and at least it is. That's where we leave it. Vic Alladeff, thank you, as always, and we'll, of course, catch you next week.